friends, Bricky here, back with another episode of Podcasterous with my good friend Scott Richer, aka Colonel Tower. As you may remember, in the first three episodes of Podcasterous, we did one where we played the best recording sessions, you know, when people have to record ads or voiceovers and they get a little testy. And episode two, we prayed for a better year, where we looked at all these outstanding holy men just begging you to give them money to buy nicer airplanes and maybe spreading the good Lord's word of homophobia, ? And on our last episode, we did the first ever untrue crime podcast, where we tried to commit Sammy Hagar and Guy Fieri of crimes that we couldn't find that they had committed. Both of them, in the end, seem to be really hardworking, nice guys, to our disappointment on our crime podcast. But today's feature, this might just be the theme of the show, in perpetuity. Did I say that right? In perpetuity? Who knows? But we could do Evel Knievel literally once a month, because Evel Knievel is just one of those characters from the 70s that is a fountain of entertainment that just keeps pouring and pouring out. And you've heard my rap on the 70s before, right? The 70s was the highest in technology, right? Technology is growing every year. You know this. You've served technology your entire life. But the 70s was the highest technology would ever be in the world's history, with the least amount of rules. Because as technology grows, so does the constraints of society. But the 70s was this time when you had the most amount of technology, you had the easiest type of living that could be done for the human race, but you also had the least amount of rules tethered to it. Now, I'm not saying I want to go back to this time, because I live and abide by many of these rules, and I understand it's made society better for everyone that is a part of society. That being said, though, there is something fascinating and entertaining to me about the Elvis Presleys and the Evel Knievels and the Jerry Lee Lewises that were birthed in this time period. I mean, true certified maniacs, where there was enough momentum through pop culture. There was enough TV coverage to sort of clip these guys together. Nobody was really trained on how to be media savvy. They said what they wanted to say when they felt like saying it. And I was always here to listen to it. And now I'm here to document it. So this is our first episode of what I believe could be endless episodes on one of our favorite subjects as friends that we have talked about for years now. This conversation, friends, it has no beginning, it has no ending, but for you, it will start here. It's Evel Knievel Volume 1 on Podcasterous, featuring Colonel Tower. Find his podcast wherever you podcast, called Here's the Tower.
He lives from day to day, never thinking about tomorrow. His body shows the scars fate has dealt his way. The strong yet simple man, riding on the edge of danger, secure in prayers that God has heard him say. He can move a mountain, leap across a winding river. Once he's made his mind up, there's nothing he won't try. There's something deep inside him, lusting for the thrills that drive him. Yet he knows someday he's gonna have to face that canyon in the sky.
Colonel Tower, welcome back, sir. How are you?
Hey, Mark Brickley, Master Brickley. I forgot what I'm supposed to call you. What's going on, man?
Hey, I'm going to go ahead and right out of the gate just tell everybody that this is Volume 1 of Evel Knievel, because I literally feel like we could do a monthly podcast where we just talked about Evel Knievel.
Yeah, we could. I actually looked in Apple Podcasts today to see what people had talked about on their podcasts, and there's a lot of stupid shit out there. We, being authorities on
yes.
the topic,
yes,
I think we could really contribute to the podcastosphere with our knowledge. And basically, we just need to share what we know from watching the same videos that those other people watched.
But here's the thing. Like, when I was looking at all these different interviews for today, everybody always focused on he's broken every bone in his body. And like that kind of math infograph fun facts, like, I don't care about. I don't care about what his percentage of successful jumps versus crashes is. Like, what I always loved about this man, and I wanted to ask you this before we got started playing some of the clips, is like, I fell in love with him because of his swagger. And I went down a rabbit hole when the internet like first kind of came together. And everybody had this question, Scott, in the mid 90s. Cool. What do I look up?
Right. And all this stuff available.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck do I look up? So I was like, well, what are things that I loved as a kid that I feel like I should know more about? And so I went down the Elvis Presley wormhole. And when you go down the Elvis wormhole, evil's just a little slide stop off the side of the highway of Elvis, as well as our other common love, Jerry Lee Lewis.
Yes, yes. You know what? It was in that sort of period of time where videos started appearing online.
Yeah.
Where you could actually watch a video, you know, in like 360p or in a tiny window on your computer. And it was like stuff started appearing online, like a TV show that you had seen when you were a kid.
Right.
That had not been available for 30 years or no one could ever. Yeah.
And like that
30 years is probably a bit too much, but.
And like that, you know, shitty detective that has all the photos on the wall and the red strings pulling them together. I was doing that with my childhood on the internet. I was trying to like, I have a vague memory of, you know, Willis telling Arnold when girls say no, they really mean yes. Did he really say that? And so I would just like try to find all this weird stuff that did not compute by modern times.
What you talking about, Bricky?
And, you know, I remember being a kid and I remember seeing the Evel Knievel action figures. I remember just thinking that he was cool as hell. But admittedly, I don't think I realized how cool he was until I was in my 20s doing research on Evel Knievel. And, you know, like everything that I'm obsessed with, I love anything that when you pull the thread, there's just more and more gold on the other side of it.
Yeah. You know, when I'm a little bit older than you, but when I was a kid, I had the stunt cycle toy.
Yes.
The one that you crank up and it shoots off. And I also had the, I can't remember what it's called, but it's the drag racer.
Yeah, I have that too.
A little parachute and the same little Knievel dude that you could use with both of them. Like twist him around and, you know, crash him into shit.
With his little cloth jumpsuit on and his rubber helmet and like just literally the worst action figure ever. Like just his head was like that fake grape that your grandma had out and the fake fruit bowl.
I wish folks could see behind you. There is a loop of Knievel stunts going the whole time. It really sets the mood for me. But so maybe when we run this, we could just add motorcycle noises under what we're saying,
just to get it more intense. So where do you want to start here? I have, you know, some various little videos. You also have some audio clips. Which way you want to go here today? Because I really think that this has got to be volume one, because there's no way we could keep Evel inside of one episode.
Right. Let's go with what you've got. My stuff is a little deeper in, like once they started making TV shows based on his life with actors playing him at, and then once you know stuff, my stuff's a little deeper in, but and also I recall that we did talk about Knievel once before. I think maybe the first time I was on Adventures in Design.
Oh yeah, when we just did like a straight up interview with you, that was something that we had talked about.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember what we said. That was a long time ago, Mark.
Oh, dude, Friday was episode 1400. So I've been rocking through the ages here. All right. So the first thing I'm going to play for everybody, this is kind of like a bio type video about evil, and I thought that this would just be a good way to get us started, and then of course Scott and I could always interject as we go along.
I have a feeling we'll have some comments.
Yeah, I hope so. That was loud.
Some thought him a hero, others thought him crazy. But
what kind of language? Some thought him hero, others right. thought him crazy.
What is it? Which page of the Bible are you on?
A reading from the Book of Knievel.
Everyone knew his name.
Knievel. Yeah.
Oh, you know that your life is all you've got to lose.
For years, the very name of Evel Knievel posed a challenge to destiny. His red, white, and blue spangled uniform contained a body that seemed undaunted by broken bones and spectacular smash-ups. Evel Knievel would always jump again.
Clips are brutal.
Oh man, the one,
like, in these montages, they never show a montage of him like clearing the 300 jumps that he cleared. No. They show the 11 jumps where he ate fucking shit, and they just roll those. It's like 9/11. They just keep showing the same shit over and over and over. It's like, I know, I saw it.
Comparing it to 9/11 is so spot on, because it's like, hey, you could do a documentary and I know what happens, and they just would show it over and over and over again. Kind of,
it's
my,
like when you see a History Channel documentary or like some true crime documentary and they've got like one photo of the suspect, mm-hmm. and they just like keep showing it from like zooming in,
just panning and scanning.
Panning again.
My favorite though impact of Evel is the one where he actually makes the jump, but then the back tire explodes. And what I love about it is he's in like a indoor, like hockey arena, you know, something like Freedom Hall back home or Louisville Gardens. Yeah. And I love that what he's doing is so DIY and makeshift that they got him up in the 300s and they have taken boards and laid them down the stairs that normally a guy would walk up and down selling beer and hot dogs. And so he drops in the arena, drives all the way down what would normally be an aisle that we would walk down, hits the flat concrete, jumps over the trucks, lands on the other side of 50 buses on the other side, back tire explodes, and then he goes sliding through
It's brutal.
But I love that he's just sliding out into the area where, once again, people are walking around on the outside, you know, buying concessions and stuff.
Concessions, yeah.
Yeah. Like, he literally slides out the tunnel that if it was the Kentucky Fair, that we would, like, walk in and walk out of to see whatever exposition was on display there. And I just love that, like, what he was doing, the building was never designed to do what this maniac's doing inside of
it. No. And the floor, yeah, I mean, you can see in that clip, there's like these like super slick concrete floors that they just like hose down to clean them. And there is a giant like support column in that entryway that he's sliding through, and he just barely misses it.
Yeah, his bike actually hits it and ricochets off, and then his bike hits him. And you know, if we were to go and look at these guys that are right now that do these tours on. Where they do all kinds of stunts on the performance motorcycles, those guys have hollow like frames, right? Like titanium, like hollow frames that they're jumping on. He did all of this on a street model Harley Davidson. Right. So the bike alone is like 750 pounds that he's trying to, you know, do all these stunts with. Whereas like Travis Pastrana and those guys, like they have bikes that, you know, you could pick up with one arm. They're so light so they can do these maneuvers.
Yeah. Even Robbie Knievel, the fucking amazing shit that Robbie Knievel did, was on like sort of modern lightweight bikes.
Did you ever see Robbie jump? Because I did two or three times.
Not in person, no.
Yeah, he jumped a couple of times in Louisville. I saw him jump out at the old Redbird Stadium. He jumped like, I don't know, it was like 50 beer trucks or something like that. And then once again in Louisville, he jumped a city block.
There's one fucking clip from of him in Vegas where he jumps from the roof of one hotel to another hotel.
That's crazy, man.
He's like 30 floors up or maybe 20 floors up, and it's the most terrifying thing you'll ever see.
Let's jump back into our little video here. And by the way, please, if you're a Circle of Trust member, all the videos that I played today, I'll have those linked below so you can actually watch them in their full view and get the actual visuals of what we're talking about today.
And you can also see when you watch this clip, Circle of Trust members, that whoever posted this left the on-screen timer on the VHS machine.
There's a lot of those today. There's a lot of those today.
It's like, well, I guess I'll just output this to the YouTubes.
No, you know, they don't give a shit. Just get it up and post it.
Yeah, I really want to know, like, what is 34 seconds into this video?
Yeah, because on YouTube,
how else would I find it?
We're 53 seconds in. So I think that this is from the clip that they pulled, because this says 34 out of a minute, and none of their timestamps are lining up with what we're watching.
And in the mid-70s, it all stopped after a failed attempt to jump 13 London buses at Wembley Stadium.
I've got to tell you that you are the last people in the world who will ever see me jump, because...
Man.
You know the background on this one, right?
There is so much to say about this.
Let me let the clip finish and then we'll give everybody the background.
I will never, ever, ever jump again. I'm through.
So, forgive me if I'm wrong here, Scott. You correct me.
Okay.
He did the jump and he ate shit. And they walk over to him and they're like, we got to get you on a stretcher. We got to get you to an ambulance. And he replies, walk me over to the microphone.
Yeah, he's actually on a stretcher, like not completely conscious yet. And people are like leaning down to him, like trying to like see if he's going to be okay. And when he kind of snaps to, he's like, he realizes he needs to address the crowd. And he wants to stand up, like no fucking... Man, no fucking idea what kind of shape his body's in. But it's brutal that he's... I mean, it's amazing that he's even able to speak.
And to be such a showman, it's like, no. Before you pull me out of here, walk me over to that microphone, because these people paid money to see a show, and damn it the hell, I'm going to give them that show.
Yeah. His good friend Frank Gifford from ABC Sports was always around, and he ran over to Knievel when he's down after that Wembley jump, and Frank Gifford says that Knievel, the first thing he said to him was like, get that broad out of my room.
Hey friends, I want to tell you all about Garm. Garmcompany.com, that's graphic artist resource merchant, has a Procreate brush bundle that's on sale for everybody, but even cheaper for you by using promo code AID site-wide. What are you going to find in your Procreate brush bundle? It features 4 Procreate brush sets to create the ultimate set of tools for a wide range of styles and design and illustration. This collection will have you covered in all fronts. 61 rugged, gritty, and clean liner brushes, 42 halftone and crosshatch brushes, 32 stippling brushes, and 28 grain pressure shader brushes. The Procreate Brush Bundle Set helps you save time and get to that desired look that you're trying to achieve with your next illustration project for yourself or for your client even faster. No more afternoons wasted on your own dime trying to figure out that next look that you want. It's already been perfected by the professionals over at GarmCompany.com. That's GarmCompany.com, site-wide coupon code AID. A friend of mine, I was talking to him, I'm like, you know, your band's like huge and you've played like all kinds of different places. Like, what's the place that like, you know, meant the most to you to play? And he's like, he played this stadium, and he's British, and he's like, you know, to play this stadium where so many of my favorite bands have played. I'm like, fuck all your favorite bands. you played someplace where Evel Knievel played. Like, that's the right. thing that I'm most impressed with.
Wembley. I don't give a shit if Oasis or Wings played there. Fucking Knievel. And in his defense, they say, you know, they say he didn't jump those buses in London, but he got all the way across.
He did.
He just wasn't like on top of the motorcycle when he was on the other side.
Scott, technically, he jumped everything. He just didn't always land everything, but he always got to the other side. Like, he never, like, he didn't go straight into the front of Caesar's Palace. You know what I mean? Like, he always got over everything. It just, the landing was a little bit off.
He did exactly what was advertised. He took himself and that motorcycle from one side of those buses to the other side of the buses.
You honor my here client, this here Mr. Knievel. He promised these ladies and gentlemen he was going to make it on the other side of 50 buses, and he did indeed make it to the other side of 50 buses. Let me show you this here video cassette of my client making it clearly on the other side. Now,
oh, you can see with the time stamp there, 34 minutes, 29 seconds. Nothing for them.
Now, if you was to see a puddle out front, and you was to lift your feet up in the air to get on the other side, would you define that as a jump? Because my client surely would.
What if you say you tripped and fell on the other side of the puddle? You're still on the other side of the puddle.
By the way, when Scott and I shared an office, we would do Southern Lawyer for 90 minutes straight debating over whose responsibility it was to put the Cokes in the refrigerator.
Right.
Did you walk past said item and think to yourself, that would be delicious if it was cold? Because if so, that is an admission to guilty.
Oh, now I see the Coca-Cola's sitting there next to the refrigerator.
Oh, fuck. We're a minute 21 into this video.
He may have meant it at the time, but now, 7 years later, he's back. The world's first and foremost motorcycle daredevil has chosen Miami to retrain. And at age 44, he seems to have forgotten how hard it is to fall.
But when you're hurt so badly that the pain tells you, don't ever do this again, you got to be crazy. You have to utter those words, I'll never jump again. But I feel all right now, and I'm going to jump again.
Nice. Man, that's a rough-looking 44.
I was just going to say, I've passed Evil's age, and I'm going to say that nobody can guess that I'm the older one, and if you put our photos side by side.
Like, that dude, man. He did some living.
Oh, hell yeah, he did.
When you see pictures of him, you see pictures of him in his 50s. He looks like he's like 140.
Oh, God, yeah. Because
he's white-haired. He looks like the one of the skeletons in the poltergeist pool.
He went on a bit of a media tour towards the end of his life, you know, just kind of talking shit and telling all of his stories, trying to, you know, set the right record for his unbelievable life. And he,
we'll get to that.
Oh yeah, he looked fucking so old and beaten.
He was born Robert Craig Knievel back in 1939 in Butte, Montana. He claims he got his nickname from the evil eye he used to give his little league batting pitchers. But Evel was always in and out of trouble as a youngster, and he claims his first real income came from robbing banks.
I didn't think there was anything wrong with robbing a bank or anything.
What are they teaching people in Montana?
I didn't think there's anything wrong with robbing a bank. Everybody knows that robbing a bank is wrong. Get out of here.
Hey, whoa, come on. I didn't know that until I watched this. Until I got to the 35-minute, 19-second
We've been at 35 the entire time we've been watching this clip. Yeah, so
is the timer not moving?
The TCR 0.35, that stays the same, but the numbers next to us are jumping around per every clip. Scott, this is what I've said to people so many times. I'm like, look, this is one of the reasons why I have the Evel Knievel tattoo and why he's one of my heroes. It's just go to his fucking Wikipedia page. And when you read about his life, his first form of employment is bank robber.
Yeah. It's incredible.
I didn't think there was anything wrong with robbing banks.
Insurance company. Somebody taught me they were robbing everybody else, so why the hell shouldn't I rob them? I could crack a safe faster with one hand behind my back than an average guy could crack one with two hands.
What's the time on an average guy cracking a safe? Like what?
I mean, for me, I don't know, 8 days? Without sleep?
Oh, he could do it in four.
He better do it on a holiday weekend. Man.
What a quote. Like, and proud. Like, this is the thing about Evil, because I watched a handful of his interviews. And I feel bad for the people that interview him, because he's a lot of work, because he's very low energy.
Mm-hmm.
But my God, the things that he says with total and utter confidence.
The fucking balls on this guy.
All balls on this guy.
There's never been a president or a king more confident than this guy.
That's one of the greatest quotes ever.
What is the quote?
The quote is, no president, no king, I think maybe no movie star has ever lived the life that I've lived. I love him. Love him.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
More exciting and certainly more honest way of making a living in doing motorcycle stunts. His jumps quickly gained him world fame.
In the top 10 sports shows that have ever been shown on television, I have number 1, number 4, number 7, and number 9.
No. It's been 6 years.
Look at that fucking Rolls Royce.
That car is incredible.
That car is great.
Years since he wore that crown of the daredevils. Years of drinking and spending time in jail for breaking the hands of a reporter who was giving him bad press.
Do you want to tell that story?
Yeah, okay, so... yeah, and that might take... Actually, that might take us into one of the clips that, okay. That I have.
Okay, cool.
So that is... He goes into, we spoke earlier about how he, there's so much, there's a bit of overlap in style and career with him and Elvis Presley in the 70s. In the early 70s, they both have big Vegas events, and they both have these Americana stage costumes, and so... Knievel is going into a... He's on the road somewhere. He's going into a shop to buy this new trash tell-all book about Elvis Presley. And he's like, I don't think I'm going to like this. And the guy behind the counter, or the guy at the bookshop, says, oh, here's another book you're definitely not going to like. And it's a book about Evel Knievel. A fully unauthorized biography of Evel Knievel. And he's like, I can't believe it's a book about me. Like, I didn't agree to this. He starts reading it, and the author says that that Knievel does drugs and like does a lot of womanizing, and you know, some of it is true. But in Knievel's view, the thing that it really upsets him is that he's so anti-drugs, and that he doesn't do drugs. So he ends up tracking down the author at some film studio in Hollywood. And this is after, this is shortly after one of Knievel's spectacular crashes. And he has two broken arms at the time. So he goes in with his manager or his buddy or somebody. Finds this writer, and his buddy holds the writer while Knievel breaks the dude's hand and beats the shit out of him with his baseball bat. So he's trying to hold this baseball bat with two broken arms while his buddy holds the dude. And so he goes to ends up going to prison for assault. And this is the whole downfall of his career, really.
Yeah, because he had a brand deal with Schwinn, where they're getting ready to roll out the official Evel Knievel bicycle, and he had all of this stuff in the works, and this legal problem and him, you know, being violent like that put all of his merchandise on hold, which is where he was making a lion's share of his money. And if I remember correctly, after he broke the guy's hands, he gave the quote of, "You'll never write a lie about another person ever again."
Right. Yeah. And now, if you want to play the clip called No Remorse.
Yeah.
That's from a little documentary from 2005, I think. There are a half dozen documentaries.
Arms were broken. Both of them.
I had casts on them from an accident.
I had to hold that ball bat with both hands. And they asked me when I went to trial if I had any remorse. I said, no, I have no remorse. My attorney told me to plead nolo contendere. I fired him. I told him I'm not pleading anything. I did it. I stood up to it. I was proud that I finally took a stand against him.
God created all men. And baseball bats and Winchester made them all equal, and that's just the way it was.
Well, but I mean, you really can't believe what you're saying, that if somebody were to write something about them, you have the right to go after him with a baseball bat?
I think I did him a favor by going after him with a baseball bat.
What a fucking badass.
Just never, ever, till the day that he died, admitted that he was in the wrong, or, like, in his mind, he was like, yeah, that's how street justice works. I break his hands, I go to jail, do my time. Yeah. That's the trade. Like, literally, you know, oh, if you want to live in a mansion, you got to spend $2 million. Like, he literally saw it as transitional.
And and how times have changed so much.
Transactional, my bad.
He's in, you know, while he's in prison for assault, unapologetic, Ideal Toys is thinking about whether or not they're going to keep... that next clip called Ideal Toys is just a couple seconds, and that I grabbed that one because I thought, oh, this is like he would be dropped the next day in today's society.
Oh, do you think if Evel was around, he'd be canceled?
Oh, definitely. You can't get away with this shit anymore.
On the toy front, it may not be a Merry Christmas for daredevil Evel Knievel. Knievel was in prison this week on assault charges, and Ideal Toys says it doesn't know yet if it will keep selling Evel Knievel stunt motorcycles and other toys. And that could be a big loss for Knievel.
The guy I hit with a ball bat created so much stink in L.A. My toy career, my pinball career, my clothing career, and my television career, all products associated. I was in so much trouble I couldn't believe it.
Can you pause it there? The guy I hit with a ball bat created so much stink. That guy that he beat up ruined his career.
It's all his fault.
And so, I mean, anything professionally from Knievel's career that didn't work out is someone else's fault.
Yeah. But, I mean, in his mind, he's capable of doing anything and everything that he wants to do. So everybody is just an obstacle in his way. Like, I don't know if it's a form of like being a narcissist, but he definitely sees the world as like something that he can conquer, just all these damn people getting in his way. It reminds me of the movie, like, well, I would have did it if that sheriff wasn't there.
If it weren't for these meddling kids.
2 days before they were going to parole me, I said, the hell with it, I'm not going back to jail. I'm going to go after this guy again, this Saltman. Oh, I never forgave this guy what he wrote about me. Never. Anyway, I escaped.
I got to read this book.
Came back about 2 o'clock in the morning when I wised up. They arrested me right away for escape.
Evel Knievel is confined in a maximum security cell tonight. Judge Rafiti in Santa Monica will determine later this week on how much he's going to have to pay for being 5 hours late in returning back to jail.
So when I was sent back down to get more sentence, he could have given me 3 years for the escape and the limousine thing, but he didn't. He sentenced me to 6 more months.
And so a much-subdued Evel Knievel returns to jail. The words of the judge Rafiti in his ears, that you are no longer the daring Evel Knievel. You are Robert Craig Knievel with a booking number.
Damn. Judge really trying to make it sting there at the end.
Thanks, Judge. I know, Judge.
I love that he got 6 more months for being 5 hours late.
5 hours late. And I also love that he describes not returning from release as escaping.
He liked to add a little drama where he could, Scott.
Definitely.
All right, we're going to hop back over to the bio on him.
Yeah.
I went through a terrible depression, jail time, drinking times, tough times, saying to myself, am I or can I be the man I once was?
It's been a long road, but he's been helped by the companionship of his daughter, Tuffy.
No mention of his two older boys?
Tuffy. He named his daughter Tuffy.
Tuffy.
Because, you know, he was so bummed that he didn't have another boy.
God damn it. Well, she's going to be tough.
Tuffy. Could you imagine that you're in your early 20s, you're out in a bar, and you're meeting a girl, and you're like, so what's your name? And she tells you her name is Tuffy Knievel.
Tuffy Knievel. I was like, okay, I think my friends are going to meet me somewhere else. I got to go.
We're on our way to Coyotes. Bye-bye.
I just felt that being with her, she's a precious little thing, would maybe help me. And I went to Montana and got her. And she's been on the road with me for 3 months. I've been both a father and a mother to her. We've traveled alone. And she doesn't let her daddy have any whiskey. And
oh, I'm sure that works out great. I was just going to say, like, being on the road with Evel Knievel is a perfect environment for a 4-year-old girl.
Is she a TM? Like, is she running the tour?
Right. Oh,
God. Hey, Tuffy. Tuffy doesn't want to let daddy have any whiskey.
You motherfuckers get out of this hotel room. Only a beer once in a great
while. And she just has, she's just been an inspiration to my life.
I'll tell you what I'd like to do. Oh, that was cute.
Evel is found more
when he said that.
Yeah, that's great. This reminds me of the old VH1 Behind the Music documentaries where they would be like, after Iggy Pop married his second wife and settled in, everything was okay. After the break, heroin strikes again. Like, they would always like show everything being happy, but then let you know, if you sit through the commercial break, don't worry, he gets back on the junk again.
More inspiration in a friend named Jerry Ross. After coming to stay at his home in Miami Beach, Evel is determined now not to follow the tragic paths of other friends who had reached the top of fame and fortune.
I just went for so long and felt so down that I said to myself, you either are going to end up like Elvis Presley or Freddie Prinze or Bellucci or whoever. Your drinking is that bad that I'm going to have to change my life, and the only really thing I know is the risking of my life, the performing. And I said to myself I was going to give it one more shot.
Scott, is he really saying that the only way that he could save his life was to risk his life?
Yeah. I mean, what he's saying makes no sense at all.
I thought about it. I'm going to die if I keep drinking, so I better go do a stunt that might make me die so that I could save my life.
Yeah, yeah. This is his, he has to go out on top.
Evel logic is so fucking good.
Yeah.
Okay, Evel, this is our... this is going to be your torture chamber for the next 3 to 6 months to get you in shape.
The montage of him working out.
Is that a stuntman in this clip?
From an upstairs gym in his home, Jerry
Ross...
the
guy working out is a double?
Yeah.
He's not actually working out?
It did not look like him doing the chin-ups.
And training with Evel for the...
Put the EK tracksuit on... on Bruce.
Hey, what a maniac this guy is. And I love the shade of the reporter. On their upstairs home gym, like, who puts the home gym on the upstairs?
let's carry all this equipment upstairs.
What's it sound like from below?
Past few months, he's about the same age as Evil. Like, and he
treadmill upstairs.
Leaves a heavy workout each day will give the same results.
Gonna build up all your back muscles and your stomach.
See, that doesn't look like Evil from those angles.
No.
Behind your head, it'll build up your upper chest as you're doing it.
I believe if I can do it, he's in the physical condition, or he has always kept himself in good physical condition over the years, so I'm sure he can do it.
He's still overweight, but pumping iron...
He's still overweight.
It doesn't matter. He's jumping on a 1,200-pound Harley. Who gives a shit what Evil
weighs? Hey, what's another 10 pounds?
Has already pumped him down 20 pounds, and Evil says he won't quit until he's in shape to re-enter the daredevil limelight.
I don't want to end up on a marble slab yet. I want to be maybe the first old daredevil.
Well, you are. Look at you.
You're fucking 44 and you look 64. Like, literally, if you took me and my dad are 20 years apart, and if you took this photo of Evil and said, is he closer to the guy on the left or the guy on the right? You'd be like, oh, put him over next to my dad.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. He looks like a burn victim.
Poor guy.
The Daredevil, number one, Evil Knievel.
He may never reach the height of fame that he once had, but as he looks back on his life, from the country fair car jumps to the world-publicized attempt to cross the one-mile Snake River Canyon by rocket, Evel Knievel admits he never wants to be as crazy with his life.
No, when I look back at the way I lived, I know that somebody, God, has watched over me. When I see the films of myself splattering on the pavement of the Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas and London, England, and Wembley Stadium and into the bottom of that canyon, how I ever got through that one piece, I'll never know, or in a half piece. It's just, it's unbelievable.
But Evil does want to jump again. It's just going to be difficult to live up to the legend he once created.
I went into a bar the other night and listened to some guys talking about me. One of them said I jumped the Grand Canyon and crashed. I didn't jump the Grand Canyon. I tried to jump the Snake River Canyon. One of them said he saw me jump 100 cars in Los Angeles. I didn't jump 100, I jumped 52. One of them said I broke every bone in my body. I haven't broken every bone in my body, I broke about 30. People look at buildings and canyons, they think Evel Knievel ought to be able to jump them with a single bound. I mean, how are you gonna live up to that kind of a thing? I'm not Superman or Captain Marvel, but, you know, I'm gonna try.
Do you think he knew Captain Marvel was a woman?
I didn't know that Captain Marvel was a woman. Is Captain Marvel a woman?
Yeah.
On the ground.
Not knowing that, I've been in Sweden too long. I have a question. Not a question, but more like an observation.
Yeah, please.
And this might not be... This might not be an earth-shattering observation, but I feel like Evel Knievel takes everything really personally.
Yeah, he's on the sensitive side.
Like, he hears some dudes talking about him in a bar and thinks and changes his whole life because of what somebody else said. I didn't jump over the Grand Canyon. I can't live up to that. Instead of taking it the way, like, these people think I'm amazing. These people are inspired by me, and they think I did all these things.
That my legend,
of owning it.
Yeah, that my legend will live on beyond me. And as people tell their kids about what I did every year, more buses, more cars, higher jumps. Like, you know, everybody is telling his story like he's a god. Like, he's a legend. Like, he did this and he did that. And he's like, get your facts straight.
Right, I'll break your hands with the baseball bat.
Auditorium in Fort Lauderdale. Evel Knievel is once again back in his familiar red, white, and blue. He'll be practicing here each week until he's ready to please the crowd.
My life is being a life risker. Hopefully, The falls I took before are going to prepare me for the falls I must now take again.
He intends for that moment to arrive in January. Evil will soon be announcing his plans for a Daredevil show for charity to be held in Miami. Whether the jump is still in him remains to be seen. But you have to admit, the fire is still burning in his eyes.
Yeah.
When Evel Knievel gets on that motorcycle, he's only got one competitor. But he's the toughest competitor on the face of the earth. His name is Death. And I've beat him every single time.
And I'm going to continue to do it. Hold on. Dude, relax.
Hold on. You're Evel Knievel? Oh, you're talking about yourself in the third person. I got confused.
Death. Wow, that's kind of morbid. Okay, we've got a good level. You want to go ahead and start filming?
You know what this big jump he was training for was? He jumped Tuffy.
he jumped with Tuffy and a little baby Bjorn on on the motorcycle.
Little basket.
Look at him soar.
Look at him soar. What a fucking hero. God damn it. I love him. So, Scott, now I have up for us a young Evel Knievel. This is 1970, and he's doing a little quick interview, and he is full of piss and vinegar early in his life here.
Well, Bruce, I feel it in life for me. I don't know about yourself, but I would rather take a chance to be something a little extra special, no matter what I want to do, if I like to do it, to be a champion or to be the best, even though I've been hurt so many times, then live like a lot of people do that live in a gray twilight world that these kind of people, they don't even know victory or defeat because they've never tried anything, and this is something that I feel compelled to do, and I'm going to do it.
Good. Man, he looks great. Looks like Paul Newman or something.
Yeah, and he's all...
What happened between 1970 and, say, 1978? I wonder what happened that caused him to age 30 years.
Let's see here. I think there's another clip of this one.
Well, this machine, you can see the back of it here, is powered by jets. It has two steam jets on it and a parachute system, and it'll run over 300 miles an hour.
He's talking about the rocket that he's going to do Snake River with.
Danger point, of course, in this whole jump is having enough altitude on the other side to bail out. This thing definitely will not land because it won't fly. It's just a rocket, and I'm going to go the mile and get out of it. The canyon there is about 3/4 of a mile across. But,
I'd like to point out to the audience that he is doing a fashion no-no of wearing two different patterns. He's wearing plaid pants with a mustard, yellow, and white horizontally striped shirt.
I believe that I can do it, but the danger point is getting out of it at 300 miles an hour and opening a parachute that fast. So I'll not only be the first guy I hope to successfully jump a mile on a rocket-powered motorcycle, but I'll be the first guy to open a parachute at 300 miles an hour and live to tell about it. That's about 21 Gs on your body is what it is.
How fast, Dad, do you figure you have to be going when you hit that ramp when you go up?
Well, when I hit the bottom of the ramp, I'll be running around 250 miles an hour, but it'll push all the way through for 18 seconds, and I'll be going over 300 miles an hour when I reach the other side.
And what happens to you then?
Well, I'll come out with the parachute system, pull a ripcord, the pilot chute will open up, it's fired by a drogue gun, and it'll open up and fill with air and just suck me right out of the streamliner, and then it, of course, will hit the ground. And this, for people that aren't aware of streamlined motorcycles, there's no motorcycle in the world that has ever gone over 200 miles an hour at Bonneville without looking just like this. In other words, it has to have a streamliner shell on it to go that fast. And this is the fastest one in the world. It's an American Eagle jet-powered machine, and I hope that my landing will be a happy one on the other side of it.
He's just sitting there with like a toy in his lap, being like, yeah, this toy, I'm going to take it 200 miles an hour, no big deal, 16 yeah. Gs. So just to kind of show the progression, here is Evel a few years later explaining to everybody that he has a positive mental attitude.
Teddy Roosevelt said one time that it's better to try and win glorious triumphs and victories, even though you're checkered by failure and fate, than to rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy victory or defeat because they've lived in such a great twilight that they've never tried either one.
So rather than be a painter of the Brooklyn Bridge or work in the Lincoln Tunnel in New York City and suck all that carbon dioxide in every day and live in those ghettos, I decided to fly through the air and live in the sunlight and enjoy life as much as I could, and that's just what I'm doing.
When you do what I do for a living, you have to have a positive mental attitude.
Do you think he's the one who started PMA?
I don't know. This is pretty early.
I mean, I might have two Evel Knievel tattoos, I just learned.
If that positive mental attitude doesn't work when you make that jump, you have to be man enough to handle the circumstances. In my case, I'm man enough.
Oh, we get that part.
Yeah, we understand. We never doubted that part.
No one is questioning your manhood.
Never once did that happen.
You have to have a certain mental attitude about you that's out of step with society.
He just dropped out of step. He didn't do drugs. Was Evel Knievel the first straight edge hardcore?
First straight edge? No, only when Tuffy was around, because she wouldn't let him have whiskey.
Tuffy, I gotta go up.
What'd you say?
Tuffy's straight edge.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He's four.
Tuffy.
With an attitude to really grab somebody and beat them into the ground to be a champion, to be a winner. And I had to have a killer instinct in me to beat what was probably the toughest competitor in life to me, and that was Father Time, death.
Oh, death.
Death, Father Time.
He loves to use the same lines in different interviews.
Yeah, yeah. I've
10 years apart.
I've learned that about him. He had like his 10 catchphrases, and he was going to crowbar them into everything.
I figure there are three mysteries to life:
who we are, where we came from,
why you do what you do, and
where you're going to go.
Nobody knows the answer to those questions.
Well, I don't know why I did what I did. I did what I did. I do what I do because I'm Evel Knievel, and I don't question. I paid for all of those operations from my own earnings. I didn't have any hospitalization insurance, never had any life insurance. I was always self-insured.
I think that the American public, or the public of the North American...
Is that Tuffy behind you?
I think that might be Tuffy. I also wonder if there's a message here, like if there was universal health care coverage in America, would people be allowed to do these sorts of stunts?
Maybe we'd have more stuntmen. And this wouldn't be a dying breed, yeah.
If you can be put back together again for free.
Why not? I'd jump
the American
everything.
American taxpayer will pick up the tab.
Hey, somewhere there's some kook who's just like, aha, I found my perfect argument against public health care. Right. If we start doing this, we're just going to have daredevils everywhere because there'll no longer be any consequences.
Continent in the free world identified with Evel Knievel because of the trials and tribulations that Evel Knievel went through.
Oh, he is Evel Knievel. I keep getting confused on who he's talking about.
Right. He's talking about himself, but he's using his own name. And also, I wonder if Tuffy shouldn't be wearing a seatbelt in that motorhome.
No, she's just standing behind Daddy driving an RV,
standing behind,
crunching on one of those candy necklaces.
Right.
That's the clip where he goes into the tunnel. Damn.
I think that's Los Angeles Convention Center, or I can't remember where that one is.
I can't remember if that's here in the... oh, shit. The Rams played there for a couple of years. They had the Olympics there, and that's where Kennedy got the presidential nomination, the L.A. Coliseum. Oh, the L.A. Coliseum.
Right.
Times that he got up when everybody thought that he never could.
You got up.
It was you that got up.
I wanted to live to fulfill a dream, and I acquired a lot of fans on the face of this earth that pulled for me and prayed for me and wanted me to fulfill that dream. The bottom line is that a man can fall many, many times in life, but he's never a failure until he refuses to get up.
Yes. Hell yes. A man can...
That's actually a great quote.
Fail. What was it? What was it again? Hold on. I got to get back to that.
Yeah, let's... one more time, Knievel. Let me type this out. A man can fail...
A man can fall many times.
Okay.
The bottom line is that a man can fall many, many times in life, but he's never a failure until he refuses to get up.
Fuck yeah. Hell yeah.
A failure until he refuses to get up. I want to make sure I get that wrong in the book I'm writing about him.
Hey friends, I hope you enjoyed part one of today's episode featured looking back on the greatness and troubled past of one Robert Craig Knievel, aka Evil Knievel, with my good friend K. Scott Richer, aka Colonel Tower, aka the host of Here's the Tower, available wherever you podcast. If you'd like to hear part two of today's conversation, as well as the three other episodes of Podcasterous and a couple of other episodes that Scott and I have recorded over the years, do me and you a favor. Head over to AID.network, become a proud member of the Circle of Trust, where you get the full version of every episode that we put out, putting out 200 episodes this year. We have 1,400 episodes already in our archives. Sometimes we just hang out and have fun as friends. Sometimes I'm interviewing creatives of all walks of life, whether they're from the art, entertainment, television, music, film scene, or maybe they're a captain of industry. Nonetheless, I love talking to creative people, how they've been able to turn their daydream into their day job. Always find that story fascinating and love just hanging out with people that have done that. Having a good time, trying to entertain you, make the workday or your car ride or commute, whatever you got going on, try to always make it go a little bit faster. Coming up in part two today, we play more clips from Evel Knievel, look into a pilot that was made about his life, and Scott shares some of his favorite clips as well. More good times, more laughs, more Evel Knievel, all coming up in part two. We've got about 25-30 more minutes of bonus content for members of the Circle of Trust, and it all begins right now at AID.network. I got one more of these little clips here, or no, I got two more little clips to play, and then we'll get over to some of your audio ones here and rip through it on our volume one of Evel Knievel. Okay. This is Evel interview, Toronto, Ontario, August 74.
I love that you have so many interview clips. Those are the best.
Love them so much.
Evel Knievel. He calls himself a comic book hero in real life. Hero, or is it madman? In 11 major crashes, he's broken more than 50 bones.
That's funny. That's my favorite photo of him right there.
Yeah, that's that one was on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, that is just... Clearly, I don't give a shit about anything.
There is a theme in photographs of Evel Knievel, and the look on his face is usually, what? What?
You're totally right. It always looks like, what's your problem?
Yeah, what? You gonna fucking take it?
It's the Snake River Canyon.
I think I've probably become immune to pain. I do not have a high pain threshold. However... I've learned to live with pain for so long that I think...
Yeah, I think he's using his words wrong here.
He misspoke, yes.
Yeah.
What would hurt an average person doesn't hurt me so much. I've jumped with a broken back when they had to inject me with Xylocaine. It's a painkiller like Novocaine. Yes. I've jumped with broken hands, casts on my legs. That's all part of it. And if you want to be in this business and you want to be the best in the world and you want to wear a red, white, and blue number one on your back, you have to be man enough to handle the consequences.
He's jumped nearly everything else. Why not a canyon? Life is boring without a few risks.
I cannot understand why a mother or a father who had a little child would not want that little child to take a risk in life, not necessarily with their life, but to take some kind of a risk and enjoy life and to try and win a victory.
This reminds me of the great Homer Simpson quote where he thinks that he's getting ready to die and he goes, I'll never get to live to bury my children.
But also, it's amazing that he can sit there and it's amazing that he can fold his hands together, that he can like he's sitting up, like with his knee up near his chest. It's amazing that he can move at all.
Yeah.
And also, what's amazing in this view we're looking at, this is one of the most 70s things I've ever looked at in my life.
Oh my God!
Like,
pick anything like in the room.
The printed wood paneling on the walls.
Yeah.
And like this lamp and an orange vinyl sofa. It looks like a joke. It's so 70s. It, like, I mean, it looks